What is up, Janksters? It's your boy Graham, also known as HamHawks42 on the internet. And today I want to talk about a card from the upcoming Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle-earth Universes Beyond Magic the Gathering set. How many words can I fit in there? I think I got them all. I think that was the longest the set name could possibly be. But in any event, I want to talk about Last March of the Ents. This is a card that got spoiled a little while ago, but we just finished spoiler season, so I'm kind of cherry-picking buzzworthy cards, and I wanted to discuss them on this show. Last March of the Ents is one that I find very, very interesting. A lot of Commander players are talking about how it's one of the most busted things they've seen in a very long time, and it has the potential to be one of the kind of game-breaking, truly disgusting cards in the set. So what is it? It's a sorcery for 6 green-green. So we've got an 8-mana mono-green sorcery. This spell can't be countered. Draw cards equal to the greatest toughness among creatures you control, then put any number of creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield. So I want to unpack this a little bit because it does read like it's very, very powerful. In like a Dorne the Siege Tower style deck where you have a lot of big toughness creatures, all of a sudden Last March of the Ents is insane. This also is a card that combos beautifully with one of my favorite cards that has gone through standard in recent memory in Cherix, the Raging Isle. It's just a 0/17 for 4. So if you had that down, yeah, draw 17 cards, then drop any creatures from your hand onto the battlefield. Yeah, that's incredible. And that is a game-altering play that is going to be very difficult for your opponents to deal with. However, there's a ton of interaction with this that isn't abundantly clear. Normally, when you see an 8-mana sorcery, your first thought is, well, somebody could counter it. So if somebody has an Arcane Denial or a Mana Leak would be disgusting. But if somebody has some kind of counterspell or just classic counterspell, then it's not going to be an issue. Well, this one has text that prevents that. It specifically says the spell can't be countered. So that's one key piece of interaction that usually makes like 7+ drop sorceries not really viable in a lot of cases, but that's not the case here. So, okay. Now, that doesn't mean that your opponents cannot interact with it at instant speed in a meaningful way. So I think in a lot of cases, you're going to have like a 5 or 6 toughness creature online. And yeah, draw 5 cards, or draw 6 cards, and put any number of creatures on that field is still worth 8 mana, frankly. If your deck has a lot of large creatures in it to make this worthwhile, you're going to have a good time. You know, you are. But compared to other big green effects that give you something similar, I don't think this is going to see as much play as people think. I think it's not going to be as strong as people think. Because if I cast this and I have one creature online, if one person kills my creature, or if I have multiple creatures, if they kill the one with the largest toughness, Last March of the Ents checks upon resolution for what is the creature with the largest toughness. That number could be a lot lower than I want it to be. Like, if I have a Cherix and a bunch of mana dorks, I'm like, all right, Last March of the Ents can't be countered. I'm about to draw 17 cards. And somebody in response is like, I Infernal Grasp your Cherix. Then all of a sudden, it's like, I guess like I have my Jaspara Sentinel over here, so I guess I draw 2 cards and then put creatures from my hand onto the battlefield. Okay, cool. All of a sudden, the effectiveness of the spell drops dramatically. And that is a situation in which you are instant speed responding. The other thing that this does, it doesn't tutor. Like, we've seen cards that do that. We've seen, like, Finale of Devastation or Tooth and Nail are great ones that'll, like, guarantee you go find the Craterhoof Behemoth, stick it on the board, and call it a day. This, if you have a large toughness deck, I mean, and actually, it's interesting that this synergizes because the Ents in this set are all, like, high toughness creatures. So that kind of, you know, flavorfully, that makes good sense. But yeah, if you have a decent-sized creature, yeah, if you draw 10 cards, there's a decent chance you're going to find some overrun effect or something that can help you close the game out, but there's also a pretty good chance you don't. And so this strikes me as a really fun finisher in, like, Toughness Matters, Doran the Siege Tower style decks. This doesn't strike me as a particularly clean go-to in all green decks. Granted, I suppose if you're running a deck with a lot of ramp, You're probably likely to have a lot of big, scary creatures anyway. You know, you're going to have a lot of 7-8 drop monsters that you're going to want to cheat out onto the battlefield. And many of those will incidentally have high toughness. So if you're running like a Tatiova or Kinnan, where you're going to have access to 8 mana on turn 5 in many situations, I mean, sure, you might as well run it because it would be kind of fun potentially. But honestly, I don't think this is going to be the game-ending haymaker that I think a lot of people think it is. The other thing about it is, it's only getting you creatures. So even if you hit like an invasion, you know, an Avenger of Zendikar or some other like really solid board-establishing monster off this, your opponents can always wipe the board. And like right now, if you're not running board wipes in Commander, I would highly recommend you change that philosophy. They are critical, even in creature-heavy decks, because there's always an opportunity for you to be behind the eight ball where you just need to hit the panic button. And Last March of the Ants is going to force that panic button a bit. But if they don't hit a hasty creature, if they don't hit an overrun effect, if they don't hit something that has an immediate game-ending effect, they pass the turn, and then whoever comes next has an opportunity to respond to the board they generated. So, yeah, it's not as terrifying. And granted, there are going to be plenty of times where this just spins into the Craterhoof Behemoth and the game is over on the spot, in which case you just shuffle up for the next one. And honestly, that seems to be the byproduct of a design philosophy that I've noticed as of late, where the mana curve, mana values are very, very precious early on. So like cards like a 2/2 for one, you know, Isumaru, Hound of Kanda, has to have some kind of downside. You know, like if for one mana you're getting, you know, there's a card in this set called Delighted Hobbit, or Delighted Halfling rather, sorry, that it's a one mana dork, and people are losing their minds because we got a brand new one mana dork. Like, those are a big deal because getting that at one mana is super impactful and very, very important. But the moment you get up the curve, the moment you start looking at 3 drops, 4 drops, 5 drops, the amount of stuff you can get, especially when colors are involved, you get a lot more. I mean, if you compare like Delighted Hobbit to something like Pelucranos, the Unchained, the most recent one, it's a 4/5 reach for 3 with upside. Granted, it's 3 green, but still, like, that card is very, very powerful. But it's limited to green, so I think it's, I don't know, that feels fair to me, but regardless, you get a lot more. Once you get into, like, 7 and 8 drops, then all bets are off, and there are a lot of people out there who will say, like, if you're casting a 7-drop spell, you deserve to win the game. And they think it's really that simple. Like, if you have gotten to 7 mana, you should just win the game. And I think a lot of those people are talking about, like, modern or standard, where, like, yeah, if you're ripping 7-drops in those, like, one-on-one environments where somebody's trying to kill you quickly, you're, like, getting to 7 mana in those environments is very, very difficult. Getting to 7 or 8 mana in Commander, where everybody starts with a life total of 40, and ramping is just kind of expected in the early turns, and it's almost never interacted with, is a situation where, at least in casual Commander, I know CEDH is its whole other thing that I can't speak to, but an 8-drop that has this kind of impact, you're going to see it a lot in Commander. You just will. And honestly, I'm okay with it. Like, compare this to something like Tooth and Nail, where there are combos where, like, if you entwine a Tooth and Nail, granted, I believe that costs 9, but still, as a 9-drop, there are plenty of combinations where, like, if it resolves, you just win. Like, period. It's over. Game is done. And Last March of the Ants doesn't have that kind of juice. It has an 8-mana, a relatively chaotic effect that has more interaction than people might realize. You know, because, like, if I cast Last March of the Ents and one of my opponents responds with an instant speed route or by overloading Cyclonic Rift, the card literally has no effect. I do nothing. Unless I have, well, I suppose actually if they overload Cyclonic Rift, I'll be able to take all my creatures and just put them back down when Last March of the Ents resolves, but I don't draw any new cards. So it's not, you know, you're not really getting the value. You're just kind of being reset to parity, except for all your other non-creature permanents. Those are all now stuck in your hand. So all your mana rocks, or, you know, if you had any special enchantments lying around, tough luck on those. So I don't know. I'm not as Yeah, I'm just not as high on this card as others. But if you are high on this card, please let me know in the comments below. And while you're down there, if you wouldn't mind clicking the sub button and liking. If you're on the YouTube, if you're listening to this in audio, thank you. A 5-star review in your podcast app of choice, I would really appreciate it. Also, if you're on YouTube and you're like, wait, this is a podcast? It is. The Overthinking MTG podcast is available anywhere audio podcasts are available. So thank you so much for checking it out. I appreciate you, and I will catch you on the next one.